Welcome back to the Cinebros podcast. Once again, I have Luke and Ray here with me, and they will be facing off today in yet another movie debate. Guys, what will you be debating today?
The 2005 Adam Sandler classic, The Longest Yard.
I don't know if it's a classic like Ray is saying, but yep, that's definitely the movie we're talking about.
All right, and I'll be moderating. We'll be getting right into it, so let me explain the format for the debate for those that are new to the channel. So each round will have a winner that will be announced at the end. There are five rounds in total. The first round is the opening argument, where each side introduces their argument. The second round, round one, is the writing round, where the two debate the writing in the movie. Round two is the directing round, where they debate the directing. Round three, the acting, and they close in the final round with the closing arguments. Guys, anything else to say before we begin?
Good luck, Luke.
Good luck to you too, Ray.
All right, which one of you would like to start?
Ray, you can start.
Okay. So, the 2005 The Longest Yard, there are actually two of these movies. The old one's on Netflix right now. It was made in like the 1980s or 70s, I think. But this one's way better. This one has Adam Sandler, Chris Rock, Burt Reynolds, Nelly, just a few that are a part of the huge cast that are in this movie. The cast comes together well. They all, I feel like, all have a funny part in this movie. There's so many funny actors in the movie. And I feel like they all have great chemistry. And it shows in the movie that they have great chemistry. And another thing I want to add is that the movie has a really good soundtrack if you're into hip-hop music. And I think it's just, there's a hidden message that I'll talk about later in the movie, but I want to save that for later on. And I guess that's all I'll really say in my opening argument, and I'll pass her off to Luke.
So, like Ray, I'm going to keep this opening argument pretty short. He did mention that this is a remake of a movie. It came out in 1974, and it stars Burt Reynolds in the lead role. He's also in the movie we're talking about today, the remake. So that's kind of neat that they brought him back for it. But the original film, if you haven't seen it, it is on Netflix if you want to check it out. Has a lot more to say than the typical sports comedy, right? At the time, it was a little controversial because of the political subtext in there. It deals a lot with prison reform, and the 2005 movie kind of deals with that a little bit, but it dumbs it down. And I think that is the biggest sin of the 2005 movie, is that it gives, honestly, a pretty innovative movie from the 70s, and it gives it the Happy Madison treatment. Happy Madison being Adam Sandler's production company that's made a lot of his movies. He's had some pretty awesome movies like Happy Gilmore and stuff like that, but he's had some stinkers like Jack and Jill and some other horrible movies. And this, I won't say that this movie's horrible, because it's not. I mean, it's pretty by the numbers as far as Adam Sandler comedies go and sports comedies go, but that's the problem, right? It takes this movie from the 70s that had a decent amount to say, more than the typical sports comedy, and it kind of dilutes it down, and it just spins it and turns it into a basic Adam Sandler comedy, right? So it's got the humor in this movie. Adam Sandler is a funny guy, and I found some of his other movies to be pretty funny, but this one, a lot of the humor's, you know, borderline offensive, and it's basically making fun of people's appearances and intellect the entire time, which I don't really think is funny if it's a little mean-spirited. I think that none of the characters beside Adam Sandler's character have any arc at all. I'll get much more into that in the writing round. There's a lot in this movie that calls for suspension of disbelief, which, if some of our listeners don't know what that is taking, it's basically saying, I know this is unbelievable, but I would like, the screenwriters are saying to the audience, this is unbelievable, but I would like for you all to just kind of turn your brain off for a second and accept it. And also, some of the acting in this movie is pretty bad. The directing, you know, is nothing special. There's some odd casting choices. Overall, it's a pretty by-the-numbers Adam Sandler comedy, which more often than not is not a good thing. And that's all I have to say for the opening argument.
All right, so we are going to go ahead and open with the writing round. Luke, since Ray went first the first time, would you like to start the writing round?
I would, yeah. So, like I mentioned before, the humor in this movie, this is a comedy first and foremost, right? Obviously, it's a sports film. but and it is a prison film. There's actually a subgenre of movies, prison films, which Shawshank Redemption is the best in that genre for sure. But this movie is first and foremost a comedy, right? Adam Sandler, Happy Madison production, a lot of jokes throughout. I don't really think any of the jokes land. I think the jokes are either cheap and mean-spirited. There's the vast majority of jokes in this movie center on making fun of people's appearances. Like right at the beginning of the movie, to give you an example, when Adam Sandler's character, Paul Crewe, is driving drunk, the cops that pull him over, one of the cops makes kind of a little snide remark. It's nothing like too bad or anything. And he's smart, you know, he's not being like a jerk about it. It's kind of hard to explain if you haven't seen it. But Adam Sandler points out that the man has large ears, and there's like a minute long bit of him just making fun of his ears, calls him like a hobbit and making fun of his appearance, and the other cops laughing about it. And it's just, it's pretty mean spirited. And maybe the first jab at the guy was kind of funny, but it spends a minute on this bit. And when you just drag out a joke that wasn't really that funny to begin with, it just becomes awkward. And this movie's full of stuff like that, right? There's several characters on the football team, right? The convicts who are not very smart, and not saying that to be mean. Some of them like just weren't taught to read. Some of them just lack common sense. Some of them have some like probably a little bit of mental deficiencies. And there's all kinds of jokes that center around this, which Ray talked about in the Paul Blart review, which was mainly fat jokes. In this movie, I don't think making fun of somebody's appearances or, you know, their intellect or how, you know, how smart they are and stuff like that, and mental deficiencies, it's not really that funny to me. You can do some things with dark humor, and dark humor is not bad, but it also needs to be clever. And when this movie isn't taking the cheap route of humor and insulting somebody's appearances for laughs, then there's just several jokes that just do not, I mean, it's hard to explain it yet if you haven't seen the movie, but they just don't land. And first and foremost, in a comedy, right, it obviously needs to have the traditional elements that make a movie good, but it needs to make me laugh. And for the several things this movie does right, it just does not make me laugh. I didn't find any of the jokes funny. I might have smirked one time, and that's a might have. I can't even really remember that, if I did smirk or not. I just assume I did, right? So aside from the jokes not landing and being borderline offensive sometimes, I talked about suspension of disbelief. First off, I do not buy for a second that Adam Sandler was an NFL quarterback. Now, I'm not saying that there's been short or, you know, quarterbacks of just average height in the NFL before, because there have been, but he's not built at all. He's just like, looks like a regular schlub that he plays in all of his movies, right? And sure, he hasn't played football in a couple years, but I mean, come on, there's just no evidence that he used to be in playing shape to me. It's just, again, it's an Adam Sandler movie. Some people might say that, you know, it's just the Adam Sandler comedy. I mean, you know, it's not supposed to be like Citizen Kane or Schindler's List. Well, yeah, no one expects it to, but movies need to be held to a standard, right? And just because it's an Adam Sandler comedy doesn't, he's made good movies before and he's proven to be a good actor. I know he can do good things. It's just, he makes these cheap by the numbers comedies and it just doesn't make sense to me. So several other things. So the character writing in this movie is the worst part about it, right? The character writing in this movie is awful. Adam Sandler's character, Paul Crewe, is the only character in the whole movie who has an arc at all, any character development. And his arc is a pretty standard washed-up athlete, gets put in a really bad situation, but through the power of newfound friendship, you know, he learns to succeed. It's that kind of deal. We've seen that a million times. And that's not a bad arc. Paul isn't written that bad. You know, it's just kind of by the numbers, but at least he has an arc. All the other characters in the movie do not, right? This movie relies on casting likable actors in the role or recognizable people in these roles and being like, oh, well, I've seen him in other things, or, oh, Chris Rock is really likable, or, oh, Burt Reynolds was really good in the original. And they expect us to care about these characters because of that, not because of writing. So I have a couple examples for the characters. So number one, for Caretaker, Chris Rock's character, right? Chris Rock's a funny guy. He does a good job in the movie. He's a good actor. He's likable. But as a character, and with all the other characters in the movie, his only point in the movie is to serve Adam Sandler's character. Everything that he does, we see Adam Sandler's reaction to it. You know, whenever he ends up dying, and not just when he dies, but even before that, we don't really know anything about him. you know, Adam Sandler says, you know, you're the best friend I've had in a long time. And aside from a scene at near the beginning, when he first gets to the jail and caretaker's kind of, you know, laying down the law and telling him, hey, man, I got your back. Here's what you need to look out for. Basically giving him the rules of the prison. And a scene later that is admittedly an awesome scene, probably the best scene in the movie. It's genuinely touching. But it's a scene where, you know, they're sharing a drink together, right? And it's pretty soon before, not soon after that, or not long after that, Chris Rock's character ends up dying. But they share a drink, and he reveals just a tad bit about his past to Adam Sandler, right? And that's it. Aside from that, Adam Sandler mentions their friendship. Aside from those two scenes, and then montages of them, you know, funny montages of them building the football team together, we don't really learn anything about their friendship. I feel like this movie should have explored the friendship more in order for me to believe it. The only reason I care about Chris Rock's character is because he's important to Adam Sandler's character. I don't like when characters are just used as plot devices, right? I'd like for him to have a little bit more about him. And he's one of the more developed supporting characters, right? We mentioned Burt Reynolds several times, who, great actor, rest in peace. He passed away, I think, last year. It was pretty recently. So rest in peace to him, a good actor. And, of course, they cast him because he was in the original movie. And I'm sure that's the reason, but he's a recognizable face that people like. But his character in this movie, Coach Scarborough, also, like Caretaker, doesn't really have a lot of motives. You see that he kind of just shows up, not halfway through the movie. It's not halfway through the movie. It's probably like 25, 30 minutes into the movie after like a tough day of practice, like a montage sequence. And he shows up and you find out that he was a former athlete. You know, he says Heisman Trophy winner, Nate Scarborough. And he just kind of shows up and is like, I've been rotten in here. I want to help the team out. And we're like, okay, so this guy just showed up and is just deciding to help now. And because he's Burt Reynolds, we're supposed to care about him. Again, all these characters are meant to service Adam Sandler's character. They don't really have anything to him. The Luke, villains of the, yeah, what's up?
Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I haven't seen the old one. I was like, does his character have any tie from the old movie to this one? I don't really know.
No, you're good. No, not really. Because in the original one, he plays Paul Crewe. So in this one, none that I can see.
So he played Paul. He plays a whole different character in this one.
Yeah, yeah. In the original, he was the main actor in the original.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. My fault. You can continue.
No, you're good, dude. Since Burt Reynolds, just like Chris Rock, since Burt Reynolds is a likable guy and a good actor who people like, and he was in the original one, so a little bit of fan service for fans of the original one that might be checking this out. He's just in this movie because he was in the other one. His character has no purpose. If you want to talk about really flat, then we got the villains of the movie, right? The prison staff, the warden, Captain Knauer, and all the prison guards. And they're cartoonishly evil. Now, I know the point of the movie is to show that they're douchebags, and that's fine. That is the case in a lot of these scenarios in jail, that the staff abuses their power, and the movie's trying to make a point of that, right? But it goes to a point of where it's a little unbelievable, to the point to where these guys are just like cartoonishly evil. You kind of expect them to start twirling. If they had a handlebar mustache, you'd expect them to be twirling the end of their mustache or rubbing their hands together. They don't seem like anybody you know. In the original movie, the prison guards are douchebags and horrible people, but they seem like people in that profession that you've seen before, right? And they seem believable. In this movie, they're not. They just serve to service the plot. It's all about plot servicing. They don't really have anything to them. Also, another spoiler alert, near the end of this movie, Captain Knauer, and we've seen this in several movies, but like the secondary villain, kind of at the end, you know, changes his mind and kind of starts to be a good guy now, right? He stands up to the warden, and it's just, there's no motivation for it, right? He's a douche throughout the whole movie. And then kind of all of a sudden, he just becomes this, you know, just kind of becomes like a good guy at the end. There's no motivation for it. If you'd seen throughout the movie that he had a little bit more to his character, and he was a douche, but maybe because the warden put a lot of pressure on him. And it was because the warden was such a jerk like he is, and we get hints of that throughout the movie, you know, you would kind of buy this guy turning against the warden. But aside from a few scenes, they have no interactions together. They have like one conversation together throughout the whole thing. So that's the biggest sin of this movie, the bad character writing, aside from things that are supposed to make a comedy really good, the humor, which I don't think is funny at all. Maybe that's a matter of preference, but a lot of this humor is borderline offensive or just in 2020 doesn't look too great. That's really all I have to say about the writing realm.
All right, Ray, before you say anything, I just want to say that was a lot more aggressive and brutal assessment of the writing than I was expecting, Luke. I had no idea you thought it was that bad.
Mind the movie, it's that much. It's just the writing, I think, that's the biggest issue far away.
Yeah, I get it. That is some pretty harsh criticism of a comedy movie.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I've seen comedies that are very good that, you know, have all these good things that I mentioned. You know what I mean? So yeah. I hold it to a little bit higher of a standard, for the same standard as other things.
All right, Ray. I'm interested to see how you handle Luke's criticism. Let's go.
So yeah, I definitely take the movie a very different way than Luke. One of my favorite things about the movie actually is like the way the characters arc. You know, at first the team that they are forming to go against the guards, they suck, like they're terrible. And Paul Reckon-Crew's character comes through, or not Paul Reckon-Crew, Burt Reynolds' character comes through and he says, I'm going to coach, tells him he's going to coach, and they start recruiting. And it's like my favorite part of the movie is when they're recruiting and they're going through seeing all these different characters in a prison, and it's showing all of the like different stereotypes that you would see in a prison. And I think it's really funny at the same time. And, you know, at first a lot of the players are lenient to joining the team, but, you know, at the end they all come together to play and be as one, be a team. And I think they all maybe don't arc as characters because, you know, there's so many characters and it's hard to do that. But I think they all, you know, arc as a team. And I think that, you know, all the characters have like very clear motives in playing, in that they want to play against the guards. They all want to beat up the guards so bad. And, you know, like, well, I'll say what I was about to say there in the directing round. But yeah, that's one of my favorite things about this movie. And another thing, I don't think that, you know, the jokes are offensive. They wouldn't have been offensive then. Maybe they're offensive now. But that's, if you really like think about it, I feel like that's, you know, how prison is. Like, that's how they talk in prison. Like, that's really what it's going to be like. And all those people that were making that movie, you know, you got to think, if they didn't think it was offensive while they're making it, you know, it really can't be that offensive. I think the jokes really aren't that forced. I think it's really just, that was the comedy then. And I still think that the comedy holds up to this day. I think that stuff is still funny. You know, it's not racist jokes or anything, like anything to go crazy over. You know, I think that you'll see a lot of the comedy, that same type of comedy, in other movies as well. I think it's just a really good comedy movie that mixes in football. It's a good sports comedy that a lot of people can enjoy.
All right. So is that your argument?
Yeah.
All right. So before we move on to the directing round, I just want to ask, because Luke, you have reviewed Major League on the 5-minute reviews segment that we do on YouTube. And
yes,
I very vaguely know what this movie is about, and hearing you two talk about it, I'm curious, and this is a question posed to both of you. How does this movie compare to Major League? Because I see it kind of sounds similar in concept, just switch baseball for football.
Well, this movie's rated PG-13.
So it's a little more like raunchier than Major League, or like more vulgar, maybe?
But like, it's still not very vulgar at the same time.
Okay. I think Major League is more vulgar.
You think so?
Sure. I think so, yeah. Because
I haven't watched Major League in a really long time.
Right. I guess I just feel like that there were more variety of jokes in Major League and it was written just a little bit better. But I mean, in concept, they are kind of similar. You could compare them.
Oh, sure. I'm not done in my writing round yet. I have one more thing to add.
All right, go for it.
So I also want to add that, you know, behind all the jokes, they kind of find a way, you know, to make it funny. I know it's not a funny thing at all, but there is a message of racism in the movie, you know, and there's a scene when the guards are calling one of the black inmates. They're calling him names, which I won't say. And I feel like they do a good job. It shows after that scene, it shows that that guy's friends, who were the basketball players who were lenient to joining the team, they're like, you know what? We're going to have this guy's back. We're going to come in. We're going to go play for the football team, and we're going to show these guards what's up. And I love how they approach that message. And, you know, there's also the message of how we need prison reform in America. It shows like an awful prison and the awful conditions they go through. But, you know, at the same time, it's still a comedy movie. And we still get to see, you know, sure, the inmates are going to be funny sometimes, but it's not really going to be, you know, exactly how the movie interpreted it. But I think they did it in a funny way.
Okay.
But that wraps up my routing round.
All right. So Ray just got done talking, but since Luke started this round, you want to go ahead with the directing round?
Yeah, I assume I can.
All right. Feel free.
All right. You know, like I said earlier, there are a lot of characters in the cast of this movie. So, you know, it's a lot of characters for the director to deal with. And I think that the director does a good job of, you know, they're putting these characters in one down a path where you're like, you know, I don't know about this movie. You know, they give you a joke that makes you laugh and keeps you in it. And, you know, I like how the director kind of adds violence to some of the football. It kind of shows how prison inmates would play football. It's a little more violent than, you know, how football is. Well, a lot more violent than how actual football is played. You know, there's guys out there getting clotheslined, body slammed. It's crazy stuff. I like how the director uses the actors at the right times. I like how he puts the jokes in at the right times. I like the scenes of how he kind of changed football, brought some swagger to it. I know I was trying to do some of the stuff that was in the movie when I was a kid, but other than that, I don't have much to add in my directing round. I'll let Luke go. Okay. And mute my mic now.
So there's not really a ton to be said about the directing round. Ray covered a pretty good amount of it. The guy who directed this movie's name is Peter Segal. He's directed a few Adam Sandler movies before, including 50 First Dates, which is considered to be one of Adam Sandler's better movies. Excuse me. I don't really know if I agree with that. I mean, it's pretty by the numbers Adam Sandler movie as well. But to me, his biggest flaw is he knows how to set up shots. You know what I mean? He directed movies for decades now. So he knows what he's doing. It's just that there's just not any like flair to it or vision to it. It's like the script says this, so I'm going to set up the shot in just like a standard way. I'm just going to put whatever's happening just right in frame, and I'm just going to line up. Yep, sounds good. Good take. I do agree with Ray that he did a pretty good job with this big group of characters, you know, big group of actors, but I mean, there's just really no vision to it. I feel like, honestly, no joke, this movie could have been a lot better if you got somebody in here who was a little bit more, I don't know, I want to say experienced in the sports type of film, because, you know, as a comedy director, for the most part, there's not a whole lot that needs to be done in terms of directing. You know, there's no flashy camera work. It's just kind of setting up the shots and doing your thing. But for a sports movie, I feel like the sports aspect of this movie, the football aspect, could have been handled a little bit better. If you got somebody in there like John Lee Hancock, who's been making, you know, you guys don't might know his name, but he's directed several movies like The Blind Side and The Founder with Michael Keaton. And he directed The Rookie with Dennis Quaid, which is another sports movie, a baseball movie. I think he's directed several sports movies. And I really feel like if you got a guy like that in there, who has made some comedies before, like The Founder has quite a bit of comedy in it, and has made sports movies before, I feel like really he could have made this movie his own, and that was kind of his heyday, was like the mid-2000s. So if they'd gotten a guy like that to do it, you know, what might have elevated it above your typical Adam Sandler fare. But instead, they kind of played it safe and picked a guy who's worked with Adam Sandler before, who's been employed by Happy Madison Productions several times. The direction's not bad by any means. It's just kind of, you know, unremarkable. You know, I think it could have been a lot better and could have serviced the movie better if they'd maybe gotten somebody else in there. But it's not awful direction. I mean, the movie doesn't look bad. It's just kind of like no vision to it. And that's the biggest thing for me. So, yeah, that's really, I don't have a whole lot else to say. But, yeah, that's my argument.
All right. So, in that case, we are going to move on to the acting. Luke, do you have anything more to add about the acting?
I do. So, the writing is definitely the biggest sin in this movie. And the acting overall is kind of, you know, it's just okay. I mean, it's fine. You have some like Oscar nominated actors in there, like James Cromwell, who plays the warden. And he's probably one of the better actors in the movie. He does a good job. Very menacing. William Fichtner, who plays Captain Knauer, I never can say that guy's name right. But he does a pretty good job. He's been very, very good in other things. He's a very like renowned character actor who, you know,
have you seen Prison Break, Luke?
No, I haven't.
Oh, he's in that. It's a really good show. I recommend it.
See, I've heard it's good. I haven't seen it.
He's super good in that too.
I could believe it. Yeah. So, I mean, he's a really good actor. This is one of the first things I saw him in, but he's been in several other things, but he's a good actor. Adam Sandler, he just kind of plays Adam Sandler in this movie. Again, it's like there's not really any ambition to his performance. It's just a by-the-numbers Happy Madison movie. This was a little bit before he started like literally phoning these in. Like Netflix comes out with one every couple years now, and an Adam Sandler comedy, and they're getting pretty bad at this point. But, you know, this was a little bit before he just started phoning him in. But, I mean, it was right on the cusp of that. And, I mean, he just, you know, I just don't – his emotions kind of stay the same throughout the whole thing. And he's a good actor, so it's frustrating that he doesn't put more effort into some of his performances because he's a great actor. I mean, I'm sure we've all seen Uncut Gems, and my gosh, he got snubbed for an Oscar nomination for that. So, guy's a good actor, and he has a lot of creative control over this movie. It's his production company, so come on, man, show a little bit more initiative in these movies. You know, act like you kind of more than moderately care. So, anyway, Chris Rock is probably the best actor in the movie. He's a likable guy, and he takes a character who doesn't have a lot to him. And, you know, I mean, he does a pretty good job. I mean, I would say if anything did make me kind of giggle, it would have probably been one of his lines because he's a funny guy. But, I mean, aside from James Cromwell and William Fichtner and Chris Rock, everybody else ranges from just okay to kind of bad. And I hate to say it, but Burt Reynolds, who is awesome in the original Longest Yard and is a good actor, it's just not very good. A lot of his lines are kind of flat. And you might say that's because he's getting older, but, you know, he was in his 70s when this movie came out. But, I mean, he's shown performances in movies after this that have been pretty good. You know, sure, he can't move around as well, but that's not really an excuse. I mean, I've seen actors in their 90s do a pretty good job. But it's just this whole movie is just kind of like – a lot of the acting especially is just kind of phoned in. Like everybody's just like, oh yeah, I'll play that part. Give me a couple lines. Yep. I'll do it. And it'll might be subpar, but oh well. But yeah, he's not really that great in the movie. And it's disappointing because I'm a big fan of his, right? Deliverance is probably my favorite movie with Burt Reynolds in it, but Boogie Nights is good. He's been in a bunch of stuff. I mean, he's iconic, right? He was star leading man in the 60s, right? Very famous, but he's just not that good in the movie. It's kind of sad. The worst part about the acting for me, though, is they cast a lot of non-actors in this movie, meaning that, you know, you got some football players. Michael Irvin plays a pretty decent-sized role in this movie. He plays a one-on-one game with Adam Sandler that honestly is a pretty good scene of the movie. But, yeah, Michael Irvin, of course, is the Hall of Fame wide receiver for the Cowboys back in the day, back in the 80s and 90s, and he's not a very good actor. And I hate to say, and of course, you know, he's a non-actor, so you can't expect too much, but he's given substantial screen time and has a lot of lines, and he's just not that great of an actor. It's not really his main career. He's an athlete, but, you know, coach him up a little bit before. I mean, It's just like they put him in this movie so people would be, hey, there's Michael Irvin. And they do that a lot. You know, Nelly is in this movie, as Ray mentioned. And I like a lot of his music. Can't say much for his acting ability. He's just really not that good. He's not horrible, but he just, it's a little distracting sometimes.
You know who else is in? Oh, sorry.
No, I don't buy him as that character, but I mean, it's kind of fun to see Nelly in the movie, but I don't know. Anyway, what were you going to say, Ray?
You know who else is in it?
Who?
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yes, I was about to talk about Stone Cold Steve Austin. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't know if you knew. I just looked on the cast list.
No, you're good. Yeah, so he mentioned Stone Cold Steve Austin. You've also got Bill Goldberg in there, who's another pro wrestler, and the great Khali is in this movie. None of the three of them are that great of actors. Stone Cold Steve Austin probably gives the best performance of the three, but it's still not very good. I mean, it's just not too great. It's like they put all these famous people in the movie, and it's distracting. It takes me out of the movie. I forget I'm watching a movie, and I just think, oh, there's a famous person I know. There's another famous person I know. Oh, holy crap, that's a famous person. It's just, it's too much for me, right? Cast a couple of pro athletes in there because it's a sports movie, but golly, they kind of overdid it a little bit. And just the cameos and sometimes not cameos, like Michael Irvin plays a significant role, as does Stone Cold Steve Austin. But yeah, I mean, it just takes me out of the movie. The performance in this movie, aside from a few that I've talked about, range from meh to gosh, they're not very good. So, I mean, again, it's an Adam Sandler comedy. So some people might say that, I mean, it's just an Adam Sandler comedy. I mean, he doesn't have to be that great. I'm like, yeah, but he's a good actor. He's shown that he's good before. So it's just frustrating when I see him phoning it in like this. But that's really all I have to say about the acting.
All right, Greg,
I will begin. So I obviously disagree with Luke. I love Adam Sandler in this movie. I would argue that Adam Sandler could play any role of any person. And one of Luke's arguments was that, you know, it's kind of not earlier on. I know this isn't kind of relevant right here, but was that, you know, he doesn't look like he's in shape. But, you know, to be fair, he is retired. He's playing the washed up old quarterback, and you can see his character develop a lot through the movie. He's developing into a much more humble person, and you can see that, and I feel like he acts that out well. And you know, this is a very big cast, and I think that the chemistry throughout all the characters is very, very good throughout the movie. I think that each character, Terry Crews's character, Cheeseburger Eddie, he hangs out with the tough guys like Michael Irvin, the basketball players, you know, the guys who are lenient to joining the team. And, you know, each one of those characters is their own character. They're all different. And it's like all these actors know that they have potential. There's so many of them, and they know that they have the potential to come together and make a funny movie. And I feel like they all do. They all come together and deliver what they need to deliver. Know that it's only an hour and a half or so movie, and know they accept the roles. And knowing that, hey, if I only get a minute of screen time, I'm going to go on there for my 1 minute and try and be as funny as I can for that 1 minute. And I feel like each character does a good job in that. Nelly, coming off being a good singer. Maybe he had a part in the soundtrack of this movie. Who knows? The soundtrack's great. I know that has nothing to do with this, but I like Nelly's character in this movie a lot. Like Luke said, William Fichtner, he plays a guard. He also plays a guard in one of my favorite shows, Prison Break. He's a very hateable character in this movie. And, you know, being a villain, you want to be hated. So I know when I was watching this movie, I hated him and James Cromwell's character, the warden. They were just gummy douchebag characters. But at the end, William Fichtner's character, which Luke was saying, he arcs and decides to do something good. When I didn't watch the end, but earlier, Luke, because I haven't seen it in a while, in the end, the guard orders to have Paul shot, and William Fichtner's character tells him not to, right?
Well, the warden is like, you know, because he's walking and he thinks he's walking to leave, and he's like, shoot him, because he thinks he's escaping.
Yeah.
And then so William Fichtner is about to shoot him, and then he decides not to.
Okay. And I personally love that, because, and Luke was like, you know, there's no motive to it, but, you know, he knows that Paul's low-key a good guy. He's accepting his defeat at the game. And he knows, hey, if I shoot this guy, I'm killing the guy. There is motive behind it. You know, you don't want to just kill an innocent guy. He knows that he's innocent. But, yeah, love all the characters in this movie. Love the cast, personally. But don't have much further to add.
All right. And with that, we will be going into the closing argument. Which one of you started that round? Luke,
I did.
All right. Yeah. So, Ray, do you want to give us your closing argument?
Yep. Closing it out short and sweet like I began it. Longest Yard, 2005. Great soundtrack. Great characters. Great message behind it. If you love cheesy Adam Sandler movies, this is probably one of his best ones. If you love football, you'll probably like this movie. If you like dark, sometimes they're not. Well, they're not that dark, but if you like borderline dark jokes, you'll like this movie. I think that from a casual viewer standpoint, if you're sitting down, just want a movie to watch and turn your brain off to, this is a very good option. I pass the mic to Luke.
Okay. So Ray mentioned that, you know, it's a cheesy Adam Sandler movie. And, you know, there is some merit in that because he's had some pretty funny, cheesy comedy movies, but I just hate that this movie doesn't aspire to be anything other than a typical Adam Sandler Happy Madison, you know, production. I feel like it had a lot more potential than that, coming off it's a remake of a movie, which a lot of Adam Sandler movies aren't. That original film being a lot better and having a little bit more to say on some issues. And I feel like this movie could have expanded on that and given it like a modern twist, and it really didn't. It just, the writing is not very good. The characters, I've talked about several times, the writing's the worst part of the movie. Characters are almost not written. I mean, they have lines and they're there, but aside from the main character, they don't really have very much motivation or depth to them, right? And the villains are a little cartoony. I understand that's the point, but it kind of still kind of rubs me the wrong way. They could have done a little bit more with that. There's a villain changing his mind at the end of the movie, which I feel like he's been shown as cold and ruthless up to that point. Very horrible person. So I just don't really buy that for his character. The directing in this movie is just, there's no ambition behind it. As with most of the performances in this movie, a lot of distracting celebrity cameos that take me out of the film. I just feel like this movie could have been a lot better than it was, but it settled to be your typical Adam Sandler fare. So that closes out my argument.
All right. So now it's time to announce the winner. And I do have one. We're going to go through it round by round and discuss why each person won. Starting with the opening arguments, it's going to go to Luke. I felt that Luke did a pretty good job in explaining why he preferred the original movie over this one, and really introducing some of the flaws that he had with this latest Adam Sandler Longest Yard adaptation. So the opening round goes to Luke.
Thank you, sir.
The writing round also goes to Luke. Now, Ray, you can tell you obviously enjoy the movie, and I thought you did a good job addressing Luke's criticisms, but you do have to consider that I have not seen this movie. So this movie is very much like typical of people that haven't seen movies, like which one of them convinced me of their opinion more. And I really got to say, Luke in this round really just sold how bad the writing in this movie was. So because of that, it's got to go to Luke. The directing round, however, goes to Ray. And that is because Luke, your full thing was that like someone could have been picked to direct it slightly better. Where I thought Ray focused on how to, he really focused on like what he liked about the director. He liked how the director like used choreography and stuff in some of his scenes, and I thought that was, he just kind of sold me on the directing round. I also thought he sold me on the acting round.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You could really tell that Ray is passionate about the acting in this movie.
You can. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know, there's just something about it. Like I really liked his enthusiasm for it, and I really thought he did a good job of just expressing that, like, it's a dumb comedy movie. Like, you know, the acting isn't, you know, normally the greatest, but it can still be enjoyable. So I got that. So we now have a 2v2 tie going into the closing argument. And Luke is the winner of this debate.
Ha ha ha.
Thank you, Tyler.
Ray, it all came down to this round, and unfortunately your closing argument was just too brief compared to Luke's. Luke did a better job of just summing up the all of his points and really came across better than your final argument.
Fair enough.
Listen, Ray smoked me in the directing round. I have to say, because I at least I feel like he did.
The directing rounds are Ray's speciality somehow.
They are.
He always wins them.
He does a good job in those rounds.
He does.
I personally thought I came back on the writing round. I had a few other things I could have came on, and I didn't want to because I thought it might hurt me. Maybe should have tried it.
Well, listen, you kind of started to at the end, I think, of your writing argument.
Yeah, you did. If you just kept going there at the end,
afterwards, I felt like it wasn't enough.
Hey, there's always next time.
Yeah. Good job, Luke.
Thanks, Ray. Good job.
All right. And we are going to have a story time on this episode. But before that, we are going to go to sponsor break. All right. So I'm going to tell a story today. It's been a while since I've had a dedicated story time segment. And today we are going to be talking about racism. And specifically, redneck racism. Because redneck racism is a glorious thing to watch. So during the pandemic, you know, our movie theater job got shut down, just like a lot of industries did. So I took up a second job at an Aldi. For those that don't know, it's kind of like a discount store. It's a lot cheaper than like Kroger or Walmart. It's really high quality, though. I really enjoyed it. So there was one day where I was on the cash register, and it was pretty busy. So we had some long lines. And I had a coworker behind me. He was running his register as well. Both of our lines were pretty backed up. And I am like mid ringing up people. And all of a sudden I hear like some sort of disturbance from behind me. I don't think anything of it because, like I said, we are busy. These things happen. And all of a sudden it becomes apparent that disturbance is yelling, like shouting. And so me and the person I'm ringing up just kind of look behind us and see what's going on. And there's this Indian man and a guy that does not have a mask on, because of course not. You can tell he's very underprivileged, long, dirty hair, dirty clothes, missing a few teeth. They're all yellow. And the redneck guy is just screaming at this Indian guy. And so obviously, as a grocery store, we do business with several restaurants in the area. And this Indian guy is part of one. His family owns a restaurant. I'm not sure which one. But anyway, they like special order their items. We order them for them. And they come pick them up. So he had like a ton of things of milk, a lot of vegetables and stuff in his cart. And this guy is just screaming at him. He's calling him a thief and all this stuff. He's saying that he's going to take all that stuff and sell it for a higher price. And the Indian guy, he looks like mid-20s. He can't be much older than I am. And he's just kind of standing there like mortified at what's going on. He's trying to say like, hey, we own a restaurant. Like, this is for our business, man. And all this stuff. And the guy is just calling him all sorts of like racial epithets. Keep calling him a thief and all this stuff. And the Indian guy is like, he's trying to explain the situation and stuff. And then the guy starts going like, oh, go back to your country, you dirty immigrant, and things like this, all this stuff. And the guy is shouting back at him like, I was born in this country. I'm a citizen here. And they keep going back and forth, and at one point they're at a guy tells him to speak English, and he shouts back, "I'm speaking English!" And it's kind of funny to watch. But they just keep shouting at each other. And eventually, my coworker has had enough, and he stands up, points at the redneck guy, and just shouts at him to shut up and to get out of his line that he wasn't serving him. He also cussed him out, but, you know, can't say that on the show.
We know Tyler ain't gonna say that.
sounds like a well deserved cussing out.
Yeah, it was. And the redneck guy turns on him and he's like, "What'd you say to me?" And my coworker steps down from like his little platform. He's like, "You heard what I said. Get out of my line. I'm not serving you." So they start getting into it and they start cussing each other out. Well, then there's a woman, just a customer. She's got like two little kids with her. She got a husband with her. And she like shouts at him like, "Hey, like, watch your language. There are kids here." And he turns on here. He's like, "Lady, I don't give an F about your kids." Well, of course, her husband doesn't like that. So he starts getting into it. He's like, "You apologize right now." Also, so they start getting into it. Well, my manager has heard this commotion from the back. And she like comes running up. She's like, "What is going on?" And then she takes the redneck guy aside and they like whisper in hushed tones. And then I guess she calms him down. And he tries to come through my line. I just look at him and say, "I'm not serving you. You can leave." He did. He left empty-handed, and we all profusely apologized to the guy that he was harassing. And I was really sad because that guy was just distraught. He looked on the verge of tears. I was really, really sad to watch.
They should have let him go home for the rest of the day.
No, not the customer, the Indian guy that he was. Yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is why I will be shopping at Walmart and not Aldi.
Walmart's not much better.
See, I figured since Aldi was like right there by, you know, Russell, that it wouldn't attract people like that. like, you know, races like rednecks like that. But
you're still in Kentucky, Luke.
I mean, that's fair. And no offense, Ray, it is also pretty close to Westwood as well.
Yeah. Listen. So I cannot tell you how many, you know, during a pandemic, as a place that sells food and stuff, we have like all like the state mandates and stuff talking about everything, have like no masks, no entry signs and stuff at the door. I cannot tell you how many times I was cussed out before I had even said a word to them, hadn't even spoken to these people before, just cussed out by random customers over all the signs and stuff. Of course, they have no face masks or anything, just like they were just cussing me out for working a cash register because of all the signs at the door. Like I had any sort of effect on those. It's really, really annoyed.
Here's the thing. Whether you like, you know, whether you're a masked person or whether you think, you know, whether you enjoy wearing masks or not, which I feel like most people don't enjoy wearing them, obviously. But why are you going to complain to someone who is not in management? It's not in government because it's the state making these. It's just like anything else. Like people will always complain to the person who is just trying to do their job and can't do anything about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like my thing always is, right? But these people get like mad at like the employees and stuff, right? This year is an election year. If you don't like the mandates being put by your elected officials, vote them out in November. Like just elect new officials if you don't like their policies. Don't shout at like random cashiers at grocery stores because you have to wear a face mask.
Right. You're shouting at people who are making, you know, between like minimum wage or like $10 or $11 an hour.
Exactly.
I mean, they can't do anything about it.
Like Tyler was making the big bucks though.
He was rolling.
Yeah, I was not as much as I would if I had taken unemployment.
Guilty as charged.
Which I did.
Same. You see, normally I like would judge people about taking unemployment instead of getting a job, but I can't do that this time. I would have made like double the amount of money I did if I stayed on unemployment.
Yeah, it's not like I didn't go back to work. I'm back to work.
No.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just I could have made so much more money.
And here's another thing is that I applied so many places and like right when, you know, the lockdown started, and of course nobody was hiring. I applied everywhere but Walmart because I was
Walmart
like,
would have definitely hired you.
Oh, they would have, but I
from what my girlfriend worked there. Yeah, from what my girlfriend said, like they were desperately understaffed. Yeah.
See, I applied at Kroger.
Really?
Did you apply at Aldi, Luke?
I did. I applied
because
you applied and you got hired, and like I applied 2 days after they finished hiring their last person. So I missed the boat.
Ah, that sucks.
Yeah.
All right. But anyway, that is going to be the end of this episode of the Cinebros podcast. If you enjoyed, you can follow us on all of our social medias at CineBrosP on Twitter, CineBros Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. And if you're not watching on YouTube, we have our own YouTube channel at CineBros. Look for our yellow reel icon. And if you're on Reddit, we have our own subreddit at r/CineBrosPodcast. Guys, anything else?
I have nothing further to add except for farewell.
Yep. Thank you guys as always for listening. Also, like Tyler mentioned earlier in the episode, I have a series where I review movies in 5 minutes or less or longer or however long it takes me called 5 Minute Movie Reviews on the Cinebros YouTube channel, exclusive to that channel. And I am doing a Halloween spooktacular series where I talk about classic horror movies. I just reviewed Scream. That's available now. And this Sunday at midnight, it'll be out on Monday, but that's when it comes out, is going to be my Texas Chainsaw Massacre review. And I'm pretty proud of that one, so make sure to check that out.
All right, and we will see you guys later. Bye.